Good morning. It's an honor to be here, and thank you all for having me here. My presentation is going to focus on a participatory approach to physical activity / exercise among people with severe and persistent mental illness. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So what is the issue that we're dealing with? The fact that mental health is a serious issue in the United States. About 26% of adults over age 18 have a diagnosable mental illness, of which 6% are severe persistent mental illness. And what that means is that individuals who have diagnoses such as schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and major depression cannot live a functional daily life without pharmacological treatment or help from a case manager. This particular research took place in Allegheny County, and you'll see from the slide that the statistics in Allegheny County are comparable to the nationwide statistics. So physical activity and exercise is defined and recognized by international institutions, including the World Health Organization and the National Institute of Health. There is evidence that shows that physical activity has a positive effect on the physical and mental health outcomes of individuals with SPMI. So I'm going to focus mainly on the process today, although the outcomes are pretty great. I really want you to take away the process of this partnership and how we came to the results that we did. So as I said, this is grounded in a CBPR approach. The relationship actually started in 2010 when I started my doctorate research at the University of Pittsburgh. I was partnered with Community Human Services and spent my time at the center having lunch at Smile and Dine, just getting to know the staff, getting to know the director, with no intention of even doing dissertation work with them. And several years went by, and we developed a relationship, or as some refer it to in CBPR as dating. I was actually sitting with the director in a Panera Bread on Boulevard of the Allies, and I said, Adrian, I have a background in physical activity. I'm a coach. I'm a personal trainer. I would love to do something with CHS to focus on kids, diabetes, and reducing diabetes among kids. And she looked me straight in the eye and said, no. What we need is a focus on individuals with SPMI because they live 25 years less than the general population, and that's not due to their diagnosis. It's due to other metabolic disorders that come from lethargy or the medications that they're taking. If you're willing to do that, then we're willing to work with you. And I looked at her and I said, I have no experience in mental health, so if you're willing to work with me, I'm happy to do this. And that's how we actually started this relationship. So I gave up all of my previous ideas and went forward in mental health. So CHS has been around for about 30 years. They started with community members in Oakland, which is a smaller neighborhood in Pittsburgh, and they deliver comprehensive services to elderly individuals with SPMI, and they also have a food bank for low-income families. So you'll see here, the University of Pittsburgh is about a 10-minute walk from CHS, and when I was an instructor at the university, I often took my students there to get to know them so they could understand the organization that I was working with for my dissertation. Very busy slide, but this is the overall picture of the process of our research from preparation, implementation, evaluation, and expansion. We have made it all the way to evaluation, and suffice to say, it was a very long and arduous process, especially including IRB approval, which I'll get into a little bit later. I just wanted to give you an overview of the theories that we used. Of course, as a dissertation student, I had to present theories and all of this for my studies, of which the community said, hey, look, we just want to do the program. So I had to satisfy both the research side and the program side. So when I showed this to my counterpart, Adrienne, she said, that's great, submit it, fine, but let's get the program going. I said, that's okay, as long as you know I had to put this in and do this for my research. So the first thing we did is we carried out a literature review. We looked at about almost 6,000 articles, and we narrowed it down to 11, of which did some sort of exercise/physical activity program in a community setting focused solely on individuals with SPMI. So the take-home messages here, besides what I'm showing on the slide, is that we found that attendance in a structured, supervised, group-based program can address barriers that are specific to individuals with SPMI. Intervention effectiveness relies on compliance, and motivation is a key aspect to success. To encourage exercise among people with SPMI, their interests need to be considered in the design of that program. And there is a gap in the literature of structured group-based exercise programs that not only include participant input, but we did not find one study that even thought about disaggregating for gender. And we all know that we have many gyms as curves, et cetera. Men and women don't always like to exercise together, and so this is important for us to look at. So here's a description of the formative research that we undertook. We wanted to do more focus group discussions. However, with the difficulty in recruitment of this population, we weren't able to do so. But I would not have been able to do these focus group discussions without my counterpart, Don McMillan, who was a residential advisor working with all these individuals for over 20 years. He knew their diagnoses and their personalities inside and out. So when we carried out these focus group discussions, I needed him to help me navigate with the population. You know, he gave me my training in mental health, and I would not have been able to finish these without him. So here's just a basic overview of our data collection. A couple sample questions from the focus group guide that was adapted from previous focus groups that have been done in similar populations. We really wanted to learn about the perceived benefits and barriers among people with SPMI, what it meant, what they thought activity, being active and not active, meant. And then what were their actual preferences? What do they like to do to become more physically active? So our data analysis project for the formative part was an iterative process. We ensured with our CHS counterparts that they were involved. They helped in developing the code book. We went back and forth after we went through in vivo and coded everything to make sure, did this resonate? I spent time with Don and said, Don, does this represent what we heard in our focus group discussions to ensure that we really had the realistic picture of what these individuals wanted in their exercise program? So some perceived benefits. Everyone saw it as increased social benefit. They were able to interact with their colleagues and their friends because a lot of the people with SPMI would spend their days indoors. They were too tired to get up and didn't want to leave. Women looked at body weight and image, and then just completing functional daily things like vacuuming or walking up the stairs were really important for women. We disaggregated individual and structural factors, individual being what participants saw affected them personally, and then structural being the surrounding environment. And you'll see here some facilitators, both on an individual and a structured level. So gender-specific classes was very important to both groups. They also wanted, from a structural perspective, to work with people that they knew. So the interns that we had, which I'll talk about, the physical activity leaders or the PALs, had been with us since the beginning of the program, and they had lunch with these individuals. So they trusted them, and they said, we want to work with those individuals because we trust them and feel that they could help us exercise. So individual structural barriers, of course, self-esteem. Will I get hurt? Will it be painful? Am I going to lose weight? How much weight am I going to lose? Men had a lot of other appointments. Many of them were looking to try and get full-time jobs and were afraid that this type of exercise class would interfere with that schedule. Men said that they didn't want to be with women because women were too wimpy and that they wanted strong exercise. You know, they wanted to lift weights. And the women wanted, they expressed embarrassment to work with the men because what if something happened, for example, one woman had incontinence and said, I really don't want to be around men in that situation. They asked me for Richard Simmons tapes. I'll get back to that later. Here are a couple of vignettes. I will just leave them up there for a moment so you can read them. They're pretty powerful. Okay, so this leads us to the actual intervention called On the Move, and this was named by the participants because the director, Adrian, they said, she's real thin, she's always on the move. I think that's what we should name our program. So we said, sure. So we enrolled 16 participants, which was 40% of the sample eligible. So clearly I'm not going to give you these amazing statistically significant results. And like I said, this is going to be focused more on the process. But there were more interested. And the reason why we didn't have a higher recruitment rate was because the IRB process took 5 months longer than we expected. And so when we started recruiting and we started generating excitement, and then month by month went by, everyone said, I don't think there's going to be a program, and we lost interest, which is really, really unfortunate. And it was an expedited review. So it was a 10-week program. We had cardio, and then we had strength sessions. Like I said, I facilitated as a coach, as a personal trainer, group exercise instructor, and I had three physical activity leaders, or PALs, who were also the ones, as I mentioned, involved in the coding and interaction with the individuals and also helping in the recruitment. There they are. Jeff, on the left, is a CHS employee and went above and beyond because he felt really passionate about this. Haley is now graduating college. Her focus is physical activity. And Jennifer on the right just graduated with her MPH from the University of Pittsburgh. So this is we had a mixed method, so it was a pre-post descriptive design. One method that we used in CBPR was participant feedback, and I'll get into this a lot more in the next few slides. But being able to adjust the intervention to the participant's needs while also keeping the rigor of the research. So here are some of the methods that we used. I collected notes on a daily basis and had meetings with the PALs after every session to start to document and tell the story of the transition over the 10-week period. We had a pre-post study to look at mobility. We used the short form 12 to look at physical and mental health outcomes. And then we had a post-intervention open-ended questionnaire to look at the satisfaction and recommendations for additional programming. This is a simple description of our data analysis. Here are several participants that we had and gave their consent to have their picture taken, and I'll explain those neat t-shirts in the next slide. So we had a little contest for participation, and we asked them, we said, you know, if we had a little contest, would you like to be involved? And they said, yeah, that'd be fun. So we had branded t-shirts and sweatpants and such, and the more classes you attended, the more paraphernalia you would get, and everyone wore their respective paraphernalia to class. We had a social where we had all the individuals who participated in more than half of the sessions to come in and talk back to the community about their own individual impact and their personal results. And this actually generated more interest in the community to be in the program. Here's some weights and balls that we had as part of the project. I facilitated the design of a PAL manual for institutionalization within CHS. And the PAL has developed this. It's based on AFA guidelines and NCSM guidelines. So it has question and answer, et cetera, so that when we were finished with our first phase, people could still be trained in this area. Around this time last year, there was a terrible storm in Pittsburgh, and Thanksgiving was approaching, and our participants said, well, what can we do at home? Can you give us something to do at home? And we said, well, if we design a take-home exercise guide, would you like that? They said yes. So we used our PALs, and we took pictures of them and gave prompts, et cetera, and developed this take-home exercise guide that we gave for the participants as well as the community at large. I tried to make myself readily available, and someone called me personally and said, I would love to do those exercises, but I want to learn more about what's available in the community in terms of places to go. So we developed a community resource guide of areas in Oakland and Pittsburgh that people could go to. So these are our results. We had 31% regularly participate, as I said. We wish we had more, but some reasons for infrequent participation included some of our individuals, their mental health symptoms increased and they could not participate. Some, due to official disability status to get a job, could not participate. Complex service schedules, and then the exacerbation of medical issues related to obesity. We had several individuals who couldn't participate due to morbid obesity issues. So the results. So we saw an impact among the participants at an agency level, and at the larger community level. At the agency level, the CHS gained a deeper understanding in the research that we were doing, we had consistent team meetings, which helped strengthen the effectiveness of the partnership. Now, CHS staff wanted to be involved. However, the problem was they had such a large caseload with the individuals that they had, it was almost a burden to be able to participate this in well. So it was pulling them in two different directions. The larger community, they expressed an interest in an expansion of this program. And we actually gave unsolicited process indicators to our funder to show them what we were doing in terms of the qualitative part and how we were having an effect. They gave us additional money to continue the program because they were seeing results in a positive way. I want to share one case study with you. We had one woman who was approximately in her late 40s, early 50s. She had been receiving psychiatric services for over 30 years. When she met with me at the beginning of the program, she couldn't tie her shoes and had to go to the doctor to get her toenails cut. She progressed over the 10 weeks and was able to go from modified chaired exercises to standing exercises. In week 4, she brought pretzels and carrots for everyone to eat. And in week 9, she told us all that she went to the local store and got 2-pound weights because she was going to start working at home. When we asked her what she liked about the program, she said the fact that a highly trained individual would spend time with mentally ill people. When we asked her if she felt more physically fit, she said, yes, it boosted my self-confidence and discipline to exercise. It felt special. I was cared for by the instructors and the pals. So here are just some things from our open-ended questionnaire that people thought were encouraging and enjoyed. We had a very interactive dynamic. The Richard Simmons tapes, after the women said, we're tired of these, can the pals please do some choreography and dance in front of us? And they said, okay. And so we choreographed some routines, and they appreciated that a lot more than 6 weeks of Richard Simmons. So lessons learned. Recruitment and retention, like I said, is critical for intervention success, and there are a variety of factors that can lead into that. The participant feedback that we had really helped us shape and change the program while keeping the rigor of the design, and allowed, I think that's truly one of the reasons why they kept coming back, because we were addressing their needs. The impact on the participants, staff, and community is something that I call ecological alignment, which is a appreciation for the interdependence of levels in a collective system. And this is particularly critical when working with a multi-level community setting. In addition, some things that we hadn't focused on but are understudied are social network size and social support. Without this partnership and the relationship I had with Adrian, this research would never have been completed. We had a very strong community academic partnership. I had professors who had started that relationship, brought me in and said, we trust this woman. They believed her. We were together. The theoretical models from a research perspective really helped us in the formative research, which was really important. The innovative mixed methods approach, while we weren't able to show some of those deep quantitative results, the story that we were able to tell and the process was what was really important. And this research is actually getting published in the fall in Progress for Community Health Partnerships through Johns Hopkins University. We had the commitment of partners from the beginning to the end. And at the end of the day, when Adrian says at the beginning of the program, I guarantee you that this is going to improve the mental health and physical health of our participants. And at the end, she said, I told you so. You went through all this research. I told you so. Clearly, there are always limitations. I explained the delays in the IRB process. The cognitive dysfunction among individuals with SPMI was a big challenge for us. Self-selection and self-reported measures are always limitations. It's a real-world setting. It's not a randomized control trial. It's not controlled. So you look at the balance of fidelity in your research while also respecting community norms. We did have a component of motivational interviewing, which we trained the case managers in, but we were not able to evaluate that component. So in terms of program and policy implications, we really felt that there was an institutionalization and buy-in from the staff. So after this program finished, I said, you know, guys, I'm a PhD student. I'm graduating. I need to make some money. I'm so sorry. I can't work for free anymore. What are we going to do? Adrian said, I'm seeing how well this program works. We're going to hire a pal. We're going to take money and hire a pal and continue this. We're going to get the staff to get involved and start, because the staff actually, one of the things we found was that the staff was not promoting the program because they said, we're overweight and we smoke. I'm not going to tell my client to go exercise when I'm outside smoking and having pizza with them. So we developed a culture of wellness in phase two, where we asked from a survey perspective, what would you like? And they started with stretching and yoga, which is exercise. It is definitely exercise. It's a form of exercise. We disseminated to the Department of Human Services and the Office of Behavioral Health, who gave us full support to help and try and disseminate this. Our long-term goal is to turn this into something like silver sneakers and possibly have this covered under insurance, because exercise and physical activity is proven to improve the physical and mental health outcomes of people with STMI. And it's a very important marginalized population. And pharmacological drugs and CBT can certainly be, this can be used as an adjunct to that. So that's the end of my presentation, and I will take questions at the end. Yes, thank you.